This is the Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 123. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. I'm joined first by our friend Jay Drew of the Salt Lake Tribune. We talk about the offense and what we might expect to see this Friday against Middle Tennessee State. And we also talk about the bizarre circumstances surrounding the suspension of linebacker Spencer Hadley. Matt then comes on the podcast. We talk about the offense, what we would like to see going forward, what we think about Taysom Hill's prospects as a quarterback the rest of this season, and we also preview the Middle Tennessee game. Then coming on the podcast is freshman soccer player Ashley Hatch. She's interviewed by our correspondent Sean Walker, and he talks to her about her spectacular freshman season and her victorious goal against the University of Utah under also some peculiar circumstances. This is again the Rise and Shout podcast. You can download us on iTunes. You can always catch us and other great stuff at loyalcougars.com. And you're going to listen to us right now. Welcoming back to the podcast because, well, it's been kind of a crazy week and a half for BYU football fans. We've brought on Jay Drew from the Salt Lake Tribune. Jay, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks. Good to be back on.
So we'll save some of the crazier stuff towards the end here, but because you had about a week ago some a little less than a week ago some crazy stuff as far as reporting on the suspension, but we'll get to that at the end. First, let's start with the loss to Utah. There's obviously 4 years in a row of losing to the rival, especially with this two-year break, so there won't be a chance to, quote-unquote, fix it next year or the year after that. But after a loss like that where there was a lot of emotion involved on the fan side, the tendency is to say, well, we need big changes. We need change on the offense because it just out of two out of three games, the offense has struggled to score points. So, Jay, is the coaching staff, you just got leaving practice, coaching staff planning any major changes to the offense, or are they talking that way, or are they talking more like we're still moving forward with the offense and the personnel that we've got?
Yeah, they're definitely talking about moving forward. They're committed to the go fast, go hard, the up-tempo offense. They're not going to change that. There was a little talk yesterday and today that they're going to shuffle some of the receiving positions. Going to move Cody Hoffman around a little bit more, maybe so teams can't double him as easily. Ross Oppo basically said yesterday that he's been injured, which is the reason why he didn't play much against Utah. Skylar Ridley basically says, yeah, they're going to move perhaps receivers inside a little bit more, which I wouldn't be surprised is him. My guess is, and they haven't flat out said this, is that your starting receivers are going to be Mitch Matthews and Cody Hoffman, with Apo and Skylar Ridley kind of backing them up, and then of course J.D. Faulks look out of the slot. The one thing that sounds pretty evident is that it doesn't look like Jamal Williams will play. No one has said that for certain, but talking to Adam Hine today, he said he's going to get more carries, or he's thinking he's going to get more carries, which he's still behind Mike Elisa and Paul Lasique, on the depth chart at running back, but everybody basically moves up a spot. So Adam Hine, the kid that's been phenomenal returning kicks, of course they've all been called back, but Adam Hine is probably going to see some carries this week. So those are kind of the subtle changes, but philosophically, they're wedded to this go hard, go fast, up tempo offense, and that most certainly isn't going to change. One other thing is I did talk to cornerbacks coach Jason Beck today, and he basically said they're not even thinking, it's not even on their radar that they would bench Taysom Hill for basically, with some inaccurate throws that I'm sure BYU fans are familiar with. He said that's a long way away as far as maybe going toward or going with Ammon Olsen. So sounds like the coaches have plenty of faith in Taysom Hill, and that's kind of how they'll move forward.
So you answered my second question about Taysom Hill. My other question, maybe the coaches have or haven't addressed this, Jay, but I know a lot of times the shorthand is the quarterback is doing poorly because the completion percentage is low. And obviously Taysom's had his share of poor throws. Has there been any indication of that maybe some of this blame for the low completion percentage is are coaches taking some of this blame, and or is there maybe that the wide receivers aren't where they're supposed to be, so sometimes a throw that looks errant sometimes isn't actually the quarterback's fault, but maybe the wide receivers aren't doing what they're supposed to do?
Yeah, it's everybody is sharing the blame. Everybody from the offensive linemen not giving Taysom good protection on many of the passing plays, to the receivers, like I mentioned before, Ridley, Oppo, Hoffman, saying that there have been way too many drops, basically 8 drops they counted from the Utah game. And then basically guys saying routes have been run poorly or totally wrong. So there's nobody's throwing Taysom under the bus on this team. They're all kind of sharing the blame. And, you know, Taysom talked to the media today after practice and pretty much said the same thing, that, yes, he's misfired on passes. He takes a lot of the blame, but, you know, it's the collective that isn't getting the job done, as he put it. So it's there's plenty of blame to go around, and everybody seems to be shouldering it as much as they can.
You know, any indication from the defensive side of the ball? Obviously, you know, I think when Kyle Van Noy made his decision to come back, you know, all the fans were excited. He was excited to come back. But it's more of a repeat of almost his entire career. The offense has been below average statistically, and certainly in some cases pretty bad against some of the good teams. Is there any indication that the defensive players are getting to that breaking point of, oh, here we go again? You know, we play well and we limit the opposition to a decent amount of points, and we just can't offensively get the ball in the end zone.
You know, not that I've seen. Today, we didn't get to talk to any of the defensive coaches. They've just brought Robert and I and Coach 2J and Jason Beck up. I had asked to talk to Coach Kafusi, but he was in a meeting or otherwise unavailable. But, no, I haven't got that. There were a few defensive players in the interview room today. Wani Hunga was there, I noticed. I didn't talk to him, but I haven't heard that. I haven't seen any problems arising. But obviously we'll kind of keep our eye on it and keep our, you know, ear to the ground, see if anything develops. But right now it seems to be still a pretty cohesive unit.
Okay. We'll leave that game for behind. I think, of course, this isn't your fault, Jay, but I think a lot of listeners are not going to be, are going to be very disheartened by what you said, because if you follow Twitter at all after the game, people are very frustrated with the offensive execution. But so let's go back before the game. There was, in some ways, I think it's one of the most bizarre stories since I've been a fan of BYU. We're used to honor code violations. We're used to sometimes players not playing. What we're not necessarily used to is the apparent discovery of a honor code violation coming because a Utah fan emails the University of Utah. So walk us through this. When you heard about this, what prompted you to, you know, less than a week ago, get government record access management act from grandma, request the emails from the University of Utah, and what do you think really kind of happened with all of this? It's a pretty weird story, even by BYU's standards around things like this.
Yeah, it really was a strange story. I can't claim the actual idea of Grandmine, the University of Utah, for the record. A colleague at the Tribune noticed that there was some message board rumblings, some online reports that basically just said that some fan had emailed photos and other evidence supposedly to the University of Utah and also to the newspapers. Well, we knew as a newspaper that we didn't have anything. We you know, basically about the Spencer Hadley affair or incident. So we thought, well, why don't we grandma them? So it was someone else's idea basically at the Tribune. And then, so they complied, the University of Utah complied, and sure enough, they did have a photo, just one photo. It's at the Tribune, we chose not to publish it, mainly because we couldn't verify the authenticity. It does look to us, and we had our own photo staff pore over the photo, it does look like it might have been doctored, it might have been photoshopped. Plus, they were able to determine that it was actually a photo taken of a photo. So it wasn't the one sent on to the U was not an original photo. It was a photo of a photo. And then the photo of the photo was taken, according to the date stamp, August 29th, which made it all more curious because that was the day before BYU left for Virginia. And obviously Spencer Hadley was not in Las Vegas at that time. He was with the team. That had been documented. So all those red flags went up, and we decided not to run the photo. But the thing that was really a story in our eyes was that the University of Utah, number one, their compliance officer asked the emailer for more evidence, said, hey, we can't go to the NCAA without any pictures. You got any? And that's when the emailer sent her, the so-called Utah fan, sent on the photo. So the first email just included allegations, no photo. Second, when she asked for a photo, he sends her one. And then she forwards that on to BYU compliance, and then the rest is history with Spencer Hadley. So hopefully I encapsulated that well, but it was there's a lot to kind of put your head around. The other unknown factor is, was this really a Utah fan? He called himself Darren Lucy, and we have not been able to find anybody by that name anywhere, basically through Facebook or Google or any sort of search at all. So there's a lot of kind of weird loose ends to this story, but that's kind of what it is so far.
Yeah, that's like you said. There's a lot of weird pieces to this story, not the least of which is what you just last said, which is basically nobody knows who this person is or if they are, I mean, what their beef was. And the fact that it was a picture of a picture, you know, time stamped, you know, when it was just a weird story. Do we have any indication if Hadley will play again this season, or is it too early to know whether this is something that is indeed, as has been rumored, a 5-game deal, or is this something where we don't actually know yet? It's kind of still a moving target.
Well, I actually asked Bronco about that yesterday, because when he first announced the suspension, he said it was indefinite, and then Kerry Jenkins of the BYU spokeswoman said it was 5 games for honor code violation. So yesterday I asked Bronco if there was a potential that his suspension could go longer than the school's. And he said yes, that it could, but that he had outlined some, you know, stipulations or some steps that Spencer needed to take to get back in his good graces. And he said that he fully expected that Spencer would do those in the next 5 weeks, and that Bronco expects Hadley to be able to rejoin the team at that time. So short answer, I think the school suspension will end up being Bronco suspension as well.
Okay, fair enough. All right, well, Jay, thanks for coming on the program. We appreciate all the work you do in reporting. Obviously, this week is not as fun to report on as the couple weeks ago with the Texas win. But regardless, appreciate all that, and we'll of course keep reading your coverage in the Salt Lake Tribune.
Okay, thanks for having me on again. It's been a pleasure.
Rise and Shout podcast, Matt. You know, last two podcasts were filled with so much hope. Rays of sunshine beaming down into our little podcast. Now we have rain clouds. It's not as happy on the Rise and Shout podcast, Matt, unless you're happier than I am.
I don't know. I feel like you get to a point where you got to move on.
You're numb.
Maybe that's one way to describe it.
You're in denial.
Right? But as far as that single loss is concerned, I mean, it is what it is.
And it is only one game, despite many things afterwards on Twitter and Cougar Board that would make it seem like this was bigger than one game.
Well, in some ways it is, right? I mean, it is the Utah game. And there's this, you know, hiatus and the rivalry matchup, and which I think increases some of the tension for people. But, you know, and it was, you know, so it's a disappointing game to lose. So it is different than other games on the schedule, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. And it will sting for years, especially for those that live in Utah, unlike you and I, who maybe have to deal with this in their face a lot more than we would. Right. So we're going to do first thing, let's say to Jamal Williams, get better. There seems to be very good news that he's doing pretty well, that it's not as bad as it may have looked when they carted him off. So get better soon. And mainly for life and for your health. Football is, of course, extremely secondary to those things.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So glad to see that he's here, that he's doing a lot better. The other thing, Matt, I want to do is a bizarre beginning to our podcast, something I don't think we've ever done, which is to say what we're not going to talk about.
What are we not going to talk about?
We're not going to talk about officiating.
Oh, yeah.
Not going to sit here and the officiating was bizarre and it's sometimes terrible. There you go. You've all had the same discussions with your friends. We're not going to rehash that. The second one is we are not going to discuss firing Bronco Mendenhall after one game. I think all of those that are in the We Love Bronco Mendenhall camp probably are in the same camp. And those of you that listen to this podcast that don't think much of him as a coach, this fuels your fire. But we're not going to spend a lot of time talking about that. And the other thing we're not going to really talk about is the rivalry. We spent a lot of time over the last two podcasts talking about the rivalry and fan behavior and all that kind of stuff. We're going to park all that. It is going to be about football from here on out, or at least our portion of the podcast.
Sweet.
The only other thing to mention, it was in the intro, but just as a reminder, we have an interview that neither of us are even a part of that'll be at the end of the podcast of Ashley Hatch, who is the star freshman soccer player, which is our first player interview in Rise and Shout podcast history. So that's pretty cool.
That's actually really cool. They're a good squad.
They are a very good squad. Ashley Hatch is a fantastic player. Sean Walker, who is part of our what would we call ourselves? Cadre of writers at Loyal Cougars? Is that even a
word? I like that. I'll take cadre. Cadre is a good description.
Sean Walker is our correspondent who got the interview for us, so we appreciate that. But stay on till the last 5 minutes of the podcast because you'll get to hear Ashley Hatch talk about actually beating Utah, which she did in one of the most bizarre couple minutes that I've ever watched of a soccer game when she does it after the goalie pretty much tries to pick a fight with her. And then she gets a penalty kick. And wow, if there's nothing better than shoving it in somebody's face after they get in your face than by putting it in the back of the net.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet.
Have you seen that play?
No, I've not.
Oh, you need to go out and find it. And just Google or YouTube search Ashley Hatch Utah goal. It's phenomenally awesome. So anyway, let's move on, Matt, to football here for a second. So we've got a few tweet bag questions, which we'll kind of use a couple of them to get through here. But Matt, if you want to get depressed about the BYU passing game, just follow at Cougar Stats.
Oh, geez.
Twitter, and they tweeted out a lot of things, including, but I'm going to focus on one tweet they had, okay, which I thought was maybe the most interesting thing that they tweeted out. Here's what they say: BYU averages one play every 17.5 seconds, the fastest in the nation by over a second. So Matt, interesting question for you here. Do we just need to slow down a little bit? Not abandon, go fast, go hard, because I don't think in the middle of the season and after three games you abandon a new offensive style. But is it time to slow it down a little bit?
I think it may be time to slow it down a little bit. I think it would be unwise to start talking about abandoning this altogether. You know, this type of installation of an offense on the level that they're trying to execute is going to take some time, and is apparently, as we're learning so far this season, it's going to be a little ugly. You know, I think based on that number and some of the other teams that have been doing this a little bit longer, it may be a sign that we could slow it down just a tad, make sure that we're getting things right. I think that there are some indicators that the players weren't all on the same page last Saturday night on some of those plays. Receivers and quarterbacks not thinking the same routes. So maybe slowing it down a little bit, making sure people have time to get their reads and get the communication done could benefit off the progression of the offense.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it is time to slow it down a little bit. I also think the other part of this, and you know, Matt, you were a critic of Robert and I when he was offensive coordinator in his first stint, but I don't know if predictability, which was the big criticism of him for a lot of people, was that he was a little too predictable. I don't know if it's predictability so much as that right now there seems to be a lack of things they have to defend. For example, we're not throwing screen passes. We're not throwing a lot of different kinds of routes. So in the passing game, I think part of the problem may be if we're doing the same four routes and that's all we're throwing to, it makes a lot easier for defensive back to know where they need to be.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, sometimes it may not even be the speed. It may just be there needs some more variety, which – in some ways, it takes time when you've got a new offensive system and trying to figure out which plays work and which ones don't. So, Matt, you mentioned quarterbacks and wide receivers not potentially being on the same page. After the game, you saw a lot of discussion on Cougar Board and Twitter or any other place you go to basically punish yourself with reading these things. But as I was punishing myself, I noticed a lot of people requesting a change at quarterback, or at least saying that the coaching staff needs to seriously consider it. Just had Jay on the podcast. He said no such change is forthcoming, nor did I actually expect that one would be. Matt, if you were in charge, from what you've seen, now neither of us are actual football coaches, so this is just two fans talking, would you make a change at quarterback? Is it time? Is this the perfect week? Because a new quarterback could get good reps against Middle Tennessee, you know, or are you going to have to see more before you think it's actually even fair to make a change at quarterback?
Based on what I've seen, I think you don't have enough information before you make the change at quarterback. This is a conversation that as fans and even on this podcast we've been having for years. It's just, the names have changed, but the song is still the same. The most, and another cliche way to say this is the most popular person in Provo is always the second string quarterback at BYU.
Yes.
And, you know, I think you need a little bit of time. And the other question I would ask is, I'm sure that Ammon Olsen is very talented, you know, and every indication we have is that he's got some great skills. If he were blowing Taysom Hill away in practice, the coaches would have already made this decision.
Right.
And the fact that that hasn't happened indicates to me that they're probably in about the same place. I don't know that we could expect Ammon Olsen to come in and win that game last Saturday night. I think a lot of things change with a different quarterback on the field. But clearly Taysom Hill's got some accuracy problems this year, which is different than what we saw from him in his kind of brief stint a year ago. So it makes me feel like there is potential there. They just got to figure out what's going on and try and fix the problem and get him back to his old throwing self. You know, another thing to take into account here with Taysom Hill is he didn't have a real solid offseason with the injury and rehabbing that. And now getting used to playing with that brace on his knee. There's still a learning curve for him as he also adds on top of all of that, adjusting into a new offense.
Yeah.
So I think we've got to give him a little bit more time before we figure it out. It's kind of the same deal with the offense. If we're going to commit to this, we have to understand it's going to take some time. I mean, this guy's just a sophomore. And, you know, the theory behind that is, you know, you give him the reps now, you go through the growing pains now, and then down the road, when he and the offense have both had time to mature, that's when you start to see the payoff for some of the tough times you're going through early.
Yeah. No, I see what you're saying. Absolutely. My thing is, I'm not a football coach, right? I can't see a lot of the things that a scout or a coach sees, right? As far as his mechanics and some of those things. And on TV, we are unfortunately given a view that often doesn't actually show you what happened on the play, right? What did the route look like? What was the route supposed to look like? So sometimes we push this all on a quarterback when, you know, Jay mentioned there were 8 drops in the last game. 8 drops is a lot of drops in a game. So that doesn't make him a 60% passer against Utah. But 8 drops may have totally changed that game. If, you know, even 6 of those are caught, you know, we might be having a very different discussion today.
Oh, absolutely.
But his stats are in the passing game are historically atrociously bad. We have not seen anything like this since the 60s in any 3-game stretch where somebody didn't get benched because of this kind of stats. Now, that's the flip side to me. I agree with everything you said about giving him time. The other thing is, especially with Williams unlikely to play next week, and who knows about the week after that against Utah State, if he'll be clear to play. But let's assume that he's out for a couple of games, and Utah State is a pretty good team. Taysom Hill's your best runner, you know, with with Williams out. He's the running back. So in some ways we may underestimate Hill's value because the passing stats are so bad, but the guy's averaging 8 yards per carry, you know, and even against Utah had a good game running the football, not nearly as good as he had against Texas, but he still averaged 5 yards a carry. So just to sum up my view, Matt, I agree with you. But I really think if there's another few games of really poor passing, that I think you have to think about making a change. This is so bad that either his accuracy is atrociously historically bad, or the offense is causing this, right? And if the coaches believe that the offense as a whole is to blame, and Hill does not really shoulder more than his fair share, if you will, then fine. But I think eventually, if he's still completing less than 40% of his passes come 2 weeks from now, I think you got to make a change.
Yeah, and it's probably fair at that point. You know, but when you look at, you know, what the games are kind of coming up over the next couple weeks, I think, you know, this game tells you something. Utah State, I think, is going to be a tough matchup.
Yes.
So, you know, over those 2 games, it gives you an opportunity to see 2 vastly different types of teams. And it gives you, you know, I think that some of those flaws were really in Virginia. People felt like, oh, well, it was really rainy. The ball was really wet. It was bouncing off people's hands.
First game with a new offense.
Right. The Texas game, it was like, oh, well, he didn't need to throw the ball. I mean, that's exactly what I said. You know, well, who cares? I mean, if you run for a gazillion yards, it doesn't matter if anybody catches any passes because you're going to score 40 points. Right. But I think what we've seen now is that, you know, if somebody shuts down the run, especially shuts down the run up the middle and force him to try and throw, we're going to have problems unless he can bring the ball down 3 or 4 or 5 feet. Where, you know, people are going to be able to catch it.
This way, we had a tweet bank question from my friend Seth Lewis. That's at Seth C. Lewis. He says, so what big change to the offense cones? I think he means comes. But I double-checked that, Professor Lewis, before you tweet it.
Well, he could be talking about drills, right? So the cones that they set up to run drills.
That's a good point. So what big change to the offense comes after this loss, or does it have to be another letdown loss first? I think what we're saying, both from what Jay told us and our personal opinions, we're not going to see some massive change to the offense either in scheme or personnel this week. I think we can safe to say that.
I think the only real personnel change that wouldn't surprise me is if something happened with the receivers.
Yes. It's funny. You haven't heard the Jay interview yet, but he talked about what we will probably see the starting wide receivers be Hoffman and Mitch Matthews.
Yeah.
And
that wouldn't surprise me at all.
You're going to see a lot more Matthews. And he mentioned that Oppo has been hurt, which was news to me.
Yeah, I saw something on Twitter about that this morning.
Yeah, so
apparently he's been nursing something.
So, I mean, that at least gives some more understanding to why he's completely disappeared from the offense, especially last week. The other question we had in the tweet bag regarding this that I thought was good was Kurt the Hurt at Klein Kurt 78 says, what do you think the running game will look like the next couple of weeks, assuming Jamal will be out? Matt, that's an excellent question. What do you think? What do you expect out of this running game without arguably, depending on how you view it, the best weapon that we've got in that backfield?
Well, that's really the scariest part of this whole thing, in my opinion. But I think what happens after this is I think we start seeing some Elisa a little bit more than maybe we would have.
He did not. He has not looked good in very limited carries this year, but he's not looked good.
No, but I think we're going to see a little bit more of him now.
Yep.
And then the question really becomes, you know, is Lasique ready to become the feature back? And, you know, as long as they don't run that play again, the rugby-looking play, you know, then I think there's room to let him kind of morph into that. I think he's got some talent, and he's got some skills that I think lend to that, you know, but it's part of it's going to depend on how they use him. But I think we'll see the ball spread out a lot more, especially this weekend against Middle Tennessee State. We're going to see the ball spread out a lot more among those running backs because they've got to figure out between Lasique, Elise, and Hine. You know, is there someone in there who's going to become the guy? You know, who knows how long Williams will be out?
Yeah.
I mean, you can't mess around, especially somebody this young in his career. You don't want to mess around with something like this.
No.
You've got to protect his health. You know, he's got hopefully a long career ahead of him. So, you know, you got to find out, are one of these three going to emerge as the guy? Or is this going to become a platoon of average to slightly above average running backs that are working out of the backfield?
Well, and Hine's the wild card, right? He has 3 carries this year. He has been pretty electric on kicks that get returned for long gains and then negated by penalties. But
that was a great run, though.
That's what I'm saying.
He really showed something on that. I mean, I think there are possibly some great skills there.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, if you look at kick returns, right? His average of 25.3 is actually really good, right? It would be a lot higher if we had – he should have – he's got 6 returns for kick. He'd have 8 or 9 without some of the penalties and a much higher average and a touchdown, which unfortunately ESPN didn't show a good replay of what that penalty was. I have no idea if it was a legit penalty or not. I watched it back. I couldn't see one that seemed obvious, but there may have been one that, you know, just the camera angle didn't show it. But anyway, so we're not quite sure. We know that there will be a lot of Taysom Hill running the football, but who else runs it behind him is something to be seen. Matt, another part with the offense overall is just big picture question. Do you think we just don't have good offensive football players? I mean, this is 4 years straight of not a good offense. Is this a matter of, we just happen to have hit this dry spell and we've got Hoffman and Jamal Williams and everyone else is below average, including the offensive line?
Well, I mean, the offensive line, while having shown some improvement, especially between weeks one and week two, is still a point of concern, something that is going to need continued work over the rest of the season. I think there's no question as to Cody Hoffman's talent or Jamal Williams' talent for that matter.
Right.
The other piece of this to me is, and I don't mean to focus so much on the quarterback position, but there's something to be said for this trend, right? I mean, Riley Nelson was not, a top 10 quarterback as far as when he was a prospect, right? When he's getting recruited, when he's trying to decide where to go to school.
Top 10 out of Logan.
Okay, one of the best quarterbacks in Logan, probably one of the best in the state at that time. I
But
think that'd be fair
not
to
highly
say.
recruited.
Not highly recruited. All right. So then you talk about Jay Heaps, very highly recruited. Could have gone to any of a number of schools. Chose to come to BYU, and did not work out well for him. Taysom Hill, highly recruited. Committed to and was at Stanford. Now at BYU. Lot of hype around him. Things aren't looking really good for him. So I think the question becomes, is it the players that are on the roster? Is there a coaching problem? Is it a system issue? But at the end of the day, I don't think we know for sure. But the fact that you've swapped out a lot of skills players at this point, and it has not improved. So does that just mean we're getting more of the same as far as recruits are concerned? Maybe, but it seems to me like that's pretty bad luck to take two quarterbacks in a row who are two of the top quarterback prospects in the country of their graduating class and have them struggle so much
Sure.
when they get onto the field with this team.
Yeah.
So it makes me feel like there's got to be something else about the system that is problematic.
Yeah. Yeah. And here's the thing, and we're not going to spend a lot of time discussing Jake Heaps, of course. We've talked about him a lot. He has not done anything at Kansas in 3 games. He's looked actually, his statistics are quite terrible. Not 35% terrible, but he looks very much like the quarterback that he was at BYU. The question that you're asking, which I don't know that we can answer, is what is the fundamental issue? Is it scheme and coaching? Is it talent? Or is it a combination, most likely a combination of both? Regardless of what it is, we've gone from being a school that, with some occasional glitches, has been one of the top 30 offensive teams kind of year in and year out for our entire lifetimes. In the last 4 years, we have not been a top 50 offense. And that's kind of concerning. Whatever the reason is, even if you have a top 15 defense, you're not going to win a lot of games against quality opponents if your offense is below average and in some cases significantly so.
Yeah, and so someone's got to figure out, what that problem is, and then try and come up with a solution to fix it, But there is a piece of me that looks at, and I know we don't want to kill this subject because people have gone over and over this, but there's a piece of me that looks at this game last weekend and even the Utah game for the past 4 years and feels like, this is a team where we play every year, and we've consistently been out prepared.
You know how what I feel about that.
So
I know everyone feels that way. I totally disagree that we are underprepared or not as prepared. I think that's a that's something we say. In the end, they didn't beat us, I don't think, because of preparation. I think they beat us because their defense has better players than our offense. I mean, I think that is, regardless of the scheme, they have defensive linemen that were a lot better than our offensive linemen. They had defensive backs that were a heck of a lot better than every wide receiver we have, not named Cody Hoffman. And we had a quarterback that was throwing the ball 10 feet over people's heads.
But on top of that, I think it's fair to say they clearly had a scheme that they needed to employ on defense to make Taysom Hill do to control what Taysom Hill was doing. And they executed that scheme very well. And that to me speaks to preparation. And you know, that's when you look at our defense, for example. I don't know that our defense, that was one of the best defenses in the country last year, I don't know that we have the best athletes on defense, you know, other than Kyle Van Noy and maybe Ziggy last year, right? I don't know that we have the best athletes in the country on that defense, but scheme-wise, execution-wise, which to me speaks to preparation, they're very good.
Okay, fair
enough. They're routinely very well prepared. So when I talk about that as far as, you know, preparation was concerned, I don't think we were ready to – we didn't anticipate what they were going to do on defense very well, and we weren't ready to answer it or to make adjustments in order to overcome it.
Well, and in the end, regardless of the formula, the defense – our defense is making plays, maybe not creating a lot of turnovers, unfortunately, which we could certainly use, but they're making plays in the offense, at least in two of the three games – is unable to get the ball in the end zone. So, Matt, let's talk about Middle Tennessee State, which is coming up here in a couple of days. We're recording this on Tuesday night, so the Friday night game. Matt, Middle Tennessee is not good. So, people, the 3-1 record, let's calm down, people. We're not going to lose to Middle Tennessee State. That's ridiculous, like over the top. I don't know. I mean, we just got beat by Utah, who's a pretty decent team.
Yeah, I think Utah is better than a lot of us. I know they're better than I gave them credit for.
Yes, and Virginia, though not great, is way better than Middle Tennessee State. And Bronco has never lost to a team like Middle Tennessee State and the quality that they've had. Actually, we haven't lost. BYU, I don't think, has lost to a team like that maybe since the 90s. So let's – everybody calm down. It'll be okay. Middle Tennessee, let's start with that premise. Middle Tennessee State is not good despite a 3-1 record. You know, beating who they've beaten is not going to get anybody too excited.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm, you know, what West Carolina, Memphis, and FAU in overtime.
Yes, in overtime.
So, you know, where they gave up 35 points.
And got crushed by North Carolina, who I think is probably a pretty good comparable to us.
Yeah, and I, you know, they gave up. You know, even the Memphis game was real close. I think that BYU stands a very solid chance of winning this game.
Solid chance of destroying them. I mean, UNC total yards, they gave up 511 yards to UNC. That is not an offensive powerhouse. So keep that in mind as we go through here. I think our predictions are going to be predicated on all that. So Matt, we love doing over unders. That's kind of what we do.
It's our bread and butter,
baby. It is our bread and butter. So, Matt, let's start over-unders. We're going to start with Taysom. Passing yards, over-under, 275 yards.
Under. Are we measuring the distance the ball travels before it hits the turf? Or are we just including completed passes? I mean, I don't mean to pile on here.
Wow.
I just want to understand what we're looking at.
Wow. Man, you're brutal today. You're brutal.
No, I do think that Taysom's going to settle down and be okay in the long run.
Sure.
But it's not going to happen this quickly. Sure.
No, I don't think it's going to be immediate. I'm actually going to go under as well. I just think we'll be able to, despite not having Jamal Williams, I think we're going to be able to run the football. And I think there's a lot to be said for calming things down and not going out there and trying to help his confidence by throwing the ball 60 times. You know what I mean? I don't think that's the way to do it. So I'm with you under. Let's go to completion percentage, over under 50%.
Under.
I can't believe I set the over under for a BYU quarterback at 50%.
The craziest part is I took the under without even thinking about it.
I'm actually going to take the over. I think they're going to route-wise really simplify things this week, and it's going to be a lot of short passes and an occasional over-the-top to Hoffman. But I think over 50, but not by a lot. I'm talking about, like, you know, 15 for 29, right? Not 23 for 30.
Yeah, I hear you there. And I like the idea of going with some of these shorter routes. I think that Cody Hoffman and his ability to go across the middle on some of these short routes have been a little underutilized.
Yes. Yes, I agree.
And I think that maybe they're just trying to save him because he's been a little dinged up. So they're just trying to use him for what he can do that nobody else can do. But I think you're at a point now where you need to start running some of that other parts of the offense.
So, Matt, Cody did have his kind of breakout game against, after having been injured, 8 catches, 108 yards, looked very good, did have one of the drops, though it was kind of when the game was already kind of probably decided. And his body language actually towards the end of that game was not great. I may be reading too much, but I think Cody is, and a lot of players are having a lot of frustration with how that offense ran towards the end of the game there. Matt, the most catches other than Cody Hoffman were Mitch Matthews with 3, who he actually looked pretty good. And Taysom, I think, missed an opportunity to throw a touchdown pass to him when he threw the ball too low when he was being defended by a 5'4" defensive back. And then Falslip had 3. So, and your prediction of Skylar Ridley being the big star just didn't happen. Sorry, dude.
Can we just not talk about that again? That was...
Yeah, that did not happen.
You put me on the ropes that time, though. You told me to pick a player that we hadn't really been
zero catches.
I had to pick someone. I had to pick someone who hadn't really done much to then contribute. Yep. I mean, the options were minimal.
I get you. You could have picked Mitch Matthews.
Yeah, I didn't see that one coming, obviously. Yeah.
So anyway, Matt, over under someone not named Cody Hoffman, single player, not total, obviously, single player, 4.5 catches in this game, over under somebody not named Cody Hoffman.
I'm going to go over.
Ooh, excellent. And who do you think said person will be?
It's Matthews.
Yeah, makes sense.
And I think we're going to see him do a couple of different things. You know, I was surprised. I was as surprised as anybody to see, you know, some of the targets he got last Saturday night. But I think that he may be the guy that is going to emerge as that second receiver that we've been talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. And I hope you're right. I'm actually going to take the under. I'm going to take the under. I think Matthews gets to 4 receptions. And I think this is a day where Hoffman has double digits because Middle Tennessee won't be able to defend him. They don't have the talent in their defensive backfield that Utah has, you know? So I think this is going to be one of his big games. And if you want to build a lot of confidence at Taysom Hill, I think throwing some intermediate and short routes to Hoffman is an excellent way to help build some of that confidence back in the passing game. So Matt, let's go to Vegas. Well, not literally, but the line for the game is currently sits at 21.5. Some places have it as high as 23. So are you taking BYU at 21.5 points as a favorite over Middle Tennessee State?
I am not.
You are not?
No.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I'm tempering my expectations of the offense's improvement.
I don't believe in tempering my expectations. I always have them unrealistically high.
I feel like I was overly exuberant in my enthusiasm for the offense and their potential production a week ago. And I am trying the best I can to learn from that lesson and apply it to the way that I approach preparing myself as a fan for this game.
Okay. Okay. I am also going to take the under on 21.5, but not by very much. And we'll get to that here in a second. So, Matt, prediction time. What do you got?
I have BYU winning this game by a score of 17-3.
17-3. That'll be appointment viewing on Friday night. about
yeah, don't miss it.
200 It'll plays run in this game, average 2.5 yards per play.
Well, yeah, we put up 443 yards of offense last week.
Yes.
And came away with 13 points.
Well, part of the thing that all of us have to readjust, right, as we talk about offensive totals, is even on poor nights, we're going to have bigger numbers of total offense just because of how many stinking plays we run.
Yeah.
Right? We had 95 plays. Average of 4.7 yards per play is not that great, right? But 443, we should have scored more points. And we should have. I mean, we struggled in the red zone. But we ran 95 plays. Like, you're going to get even a mediocre offense is going to fall into on 95 plays, 350 yards, right? I mean,
right.
So 95 plays, that's a lot of plays.
It's a lot of plays.
So I am totally different than you in this department. You said 17-3.
Mm-hmm.
So I am going with 27-7. See, actually not that difference.
Not very much. Well, you're expecting a lot, some more points.
Part of that is I expect that we have not had a lot, zero turnovers from the opposition? Is that true? We've got like one.
Yeah, it's not a lot.
So I think Middle Tennessee.
Craig Bills has an interception.
Yeah, so it's like one interception and maybe one fumble recovery in three games. I think that tide turns and there's three or four turnovers by Middle Tennessee State, which leads to some very short fields and easy points. I am not anticipating a massive offensive day, though I do think we'll have a good offensive day. And in the end, though, I think, the defense will be dominant and their defense won't really be able to slow our offense down in a meaningful way. I think this could be a game that if our offensive line and everyone's ticked off enough, that we end up putting up a lot more points than that. But I'm not going to predict that just because right now I think I just don't know what to make. One really good offensive game and two not so good offensive games. I'm going to have to just lean towards the two not so good offensive games.
Mm-hmm.
And say that it's more like that. So Matt, we are out of time. So we're both optimistic for this week. We'll come on next week to talk about Utah State, and we'll have at least one more game from Utah State as to what we be able to decide after they play San Jose State, what we think they're going to what type of team we think they're going to be. Anything before we check out?
No, I mean I'm just buckling in for the rest of the season. I'm excited to see how this team bounces back from what happened and what they're able to do down the road to improve.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, check out all our coverage at loyalcougars.com. Follow us on Twitter at @BYU_RiseShout. Email us, Adam@loyalcougars, Matt@loyalcougars. Follow that with .com. And also check out our YouTube videos there as well, as we do a weekly short video podcast. Thanks for downloading. Thanks for listening. And we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars.
We're here right now with Ashley Hatch, freshman from Gilbert, Arizona.
Yep.
Go Highland.
Yep.
Superstar freshman, 3 goals on the year, 15 shots on goal, played 481 minutes so far.
Yeah.
That's a lot of workload.
Yeah, it's nice though. I love it.
That's more than a lot of seniors on some teams get. So how was it? Talk to me a little bit about that, coming in and picking up a big workload right off the bat for a really good BYU soccer team. I mean, I'm sure you saw what they did last year, going to the Elite Eight, barely losing to the eventual national champion.
Yeah.
I mean, what's it like to step right in and just as a freshman pick up all those minutes and play such a key role?
I don't know. It's awesome. Like, we definitely did lose a lot of great players last year. So in preparation coming here, I knew that. So I worked hard so that I could play a role on this team. So I just had to do my best.
If you haven't noticed, I don't know if you've seen the signs around, but it's rivalry week right now.
Yeah.
BYU, Utah. You're from the region, sort of. Did you know very much about the Holy War rivalry, you know, BYU and Utah before you came here, or what's your first taste of the rivalry?
Well, I knew a little bit about it, but I didn't know how extreme it was until I got here. So, I mean, especially after our soccer game, I definitely know it's a huge rival, so.
Speaking of that game, winning penalty kick of a 1-0 shootout.
Yeah.
Can you remember back that far for me? Kind of describe that moment, what it was like picking up the penalty and then going. You seem to step up right away and say, I'm taking this. I got this. Don't worry.
Yeah.
What was just that moment like as you stepped up to the ball?
I don't know. I just try to stay focused as I step up to the ball and just not let anything get in my head. Mm-hmm. Stay calm. I tried to act like no one was there, even though there was over 5,000 fans there. But, you know, just stay focused and have confidence in myself. And I knew if I had confidence in myself and I stepped up and kicked it, I would make it. So,
over 5,000 fans at Southfield.
Yeah.
You've gotten that twice now.
Yeah.
What's that atmosphere been like? As just a kid, I mean, you're still a kid in some ways. So
yeah.
What's that like playing in front of those fans?
It's awesome. I love it. I mean, they're all really awesome. And they're all really supportive of us. So it's nice when they're all rooting for you. So it's nice. It brings a lot of energy to the field and gives you a lot more energy while you're playing. So I love it.
I did some investigative work into your past.
Uh-huh.
No, I was just kidding. I looked up your profile on BYUCougars.com.
Okay.
You're not the only Hatch who plays soccer. You've got a little sister who's...
I do have a
little sister. She's
okay. Yeah, she's all right. No, she's really good. She'll be here in 2 years, so I'm excited.
What's it like just thinking about potentially being able to play Division I soccer with your sister? I mean, is that kind of a dream come true for you?
Oh, it definitely is. I mean, we worked ever since we were younger together. We've worked so hard together. And so to finally get that, we're going to be able to play at D1 together. It's just the ultimate dream. So hard work does pay off.
Did you play with her much when you were younger?
I did. She always played 2 years up on my club team. And I played 2 years of high school with her. So we work really well together. And we definitely have helped each other out a lot, so.
Backyard soccer, one-on-one,
yeah.
You're playing with your little sister.
Yeah.
Be honest now, how often did you beat her?
I don't know, it was pretty even, I don't know. As she got older and stronger, it made it more difficult for me to beat her, so I don't know, it was pretty even.
I'm going to relive a little bit of a painful loss for you now.
Okay.
Right here, last weekend, first loss of the year, 1-0
yeah.
UC Irvine. Do you still remember much about that match? Did you learn very much, or have you already put it behind you and you're moving on?
Definitely learning from our mistakes and trying to fix what we did wrong, but always looking forward and trying to do our best, do better than we did, so just take what we can from it.
What's the main thing that you feel like you personally can take from that match?
Personally, is start off strong, get more shots on goal, and help out the team more offensively, so...
Get more shots on goal
yeah.
from a freshman who's already got 15 on the season.
Yeah, you can always do better.
WCC this year, really tough conference. You've got, you know, three, by the time this is published, maybe four teams in the top 25 in the country.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just what does it mean to be able to play in a conference that's that strong, that has that many ranked opponents, where you know week in and week out it's going to be big, it's going to be a big match? I mean, how is it just... heading in as we get ready for West Coast Conference play here. How is it just preparing for some of those teams and knowing how big the sport is?
It's always good knowing that you're going against great opponents because you work harder in practice. Everyone makes you better. So definitely like the competition. It pushes our team. It pushes me. So it's definitely a good thing.
Last question, then I'll let you go. Kind of a fun one here. We like to give a little bit of a Loyal Cougars bump to...
Yeah.
To, you know, anybody who helps us out here. So you're on Twitter, Instagram, anything like that?
I am not. I only have a Facebook, so I'm a little...
So you don't see any of the Twitter rides that are going on after your games?
I don't. I just sometimes my friends will show me things, but I try and stay out of it, you know, try and focus on school and soccer, so... But maybe one of these days.
You've got a pretty good following on the Twitter webs if you ever want to join in. So
oh, okay.
Just so you know.
That's good to know.